Welcome to The Sandbox, a Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Participate in the podcast and get your level 7 access by calling 304-837-2278 or go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here are your hosts, Mike and Dave.
Welcome, everybody, to The Sandbox, a Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. Get ready to be reborn. My name is Mike.
And I'm Dave, and this is show number 114 of The Sandbox, where we'll be discussing the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. two-hour season 6 finale, comprised of episode 12, titled The Sign, and episode 13, titled New Life, both of which aired August 2nd, 2019.
And they pulled out the big guns for this one, episode 12 being written by Nora and Lila Zuckerman and directed by Nina Lopez-Corrado. And episode 13 was actually written by Jed Whedon and Brent Fletcher instead of Marissa Tancheroen this time, but it was directed by Kevin Tancheroen, which is fitting for the finale. And this is one that's going to go down in the books as all over the place in terms of my feelings, highs and lows, because I'm just really thrilled with the direction they took the extended epilogue, but at the same time, overall, you can't help but look back at the season when you see a finale, and there have been some disappointments along the way, but what a fun one this is going to be to discuss, right, Dave? I mean, it's like all kinds of things to speculate on, which we love.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly an uneven two-hour season finale, but as you said, the last 10, 15 minutes, really, they're in recovery mode, yeah. And it makes you forget some of the points that we want to discuss earlier in the two episodes.
Yeah, so we'll get to that in a second, but I just want to go over a couple of show news items. First of all, it's interesting to note that season 7 wrapped last week, just as the show was ending up, and I had a favorite moment from social media that came from Ming-Na Wen's Instagram stories. She did this video with Brianna Venskis, who plays Agent Piper, and she kind of was at the wrap party or getting ready to go to the wrap party or just finished filming or something like that. And she says, "This may be a spoiler to post this, but I'm here with, and what did you say to me, Brianna?" And Brianna says, "What are they going to do, fire us?" Because, of course, we knew that that meant Piper survives through season 7. And apparently, Ming-Na Wen had a couple of spoilers that came through her social media, which we won't mention here in case you guys want to keep it spoiler-free, but there's certain things that came through on social media that is leading the entire fandom to believe, in addition to the clues that we got in this finale, that we're going to be seeing a link to Agent Carter next season. Have you seen all those articles out there, Dave?
Yeah, I have. And, you know, we'll talk a little bit about why that might be problematic.
Right.
But it's certainly exciting, especially if you're a fan of Agent Carter, which I think most of us are.
Right. And I think that it's been set up so much by the particular spoiler that Ming-Na Wen put on her Instagram that was instantly taken down, of course, but too late for the internet. And so I feel like if they don't deliver on that, people are going to be pissed, but we shall see. And I also just want to point out really quickly, it's very, very important for regular listeners, especially, to stay tuned until the end of the podcast, because we have a very important announcement that we need to make regarding the podcast. So please stay tuned until the very end for that announcement. But let's go ahead and dive in, Dave, with our episode discussion.
Well, Mike, last week we talked about whether episode 611 was the penultimate episode and whether or not this was going to be 1 2-hour episode. So I think we got our answer. Episode 612 had the traditional epilogue. And while one episode seamlessly blends into the previous one, I think they were certainly two separate episodes.
For sure. Yeah.
So I think in episode 612, we'll kind of cruise through that relatively quickly, because while there are some things we do need to talk about, for the most part, it's getting us ready for the finale episode. But one of the things that we see in this episode, you know, Izell's building the monoliths, and of course, Daisy May and Sarge are trying to stop her. But when Yo-Yo and Mac create Flint from their minds, being assisted by the monolith, the question comes up several times, is Flint real? Is that something we really need to worry about? I mean, is it important?
Oh, yeah. Oh, sure, for sure. If you're making a list of the top 10, top 15 questions that come out of this episode, Flint has got to be on everyone's list, especially since we don't see him and his status at the end of the actual finale. So no, I think this is very crucial, and I'm extremely thankful that they didn't just gloss over it. They had characters actually referring to the fact that, why are we caring about this Flint? Why are we carting him back to base? He's not a real person. And it is interesting to me from one standpoint, and that is that the fear dimension seemed to conjure up versions of people that kind of played on people's fears. Like, for example, Dr. Benson had his husband show up and kind of niggled at his guilt, didn't he?
Sure.
It was a version of that person. It wasn't how that person would actually act. So it is interesting to see Flint being himself and being exploitable by Izell. Like, his inhuman powers are intact, courtesy of the creation monolith. So I thought that was interesting too. But I think they're going to take this philosophical discussion and carry it through. And in fact, I think that might have been part of the debrief that I did with the showrunners that's available at denofgeek.com. Wasn't able to share that for the podcast, by the way, but there's an article interview on Den of Geek that I did going over some of these points, and Flint was one of them.
Right. And you know, I think when we take it in conjunction with something we find out at the end of the finale, episode 613, the question of, is he real? I think it's going to apply to another character as well. And we'll hold off on that character for a little bit. But I love Mac's reaction. He sure seems real to me.
Yeah, yeah. And I appreciate that fact. I like that we're going to be able to explore this concept of identity, because that's always interesting to me.
Right. And he certainly seemed like the Flint that we know. There didn't seem to be any red flags that this is some sort of partial Flint, that we only get the bad side or something like that. So, yeah, like you said, the question of what makes a person.
Yeah. I think the main thing that's different between things that come out of that monolith are that if you stab it in the heart, it disintegrates. So I think Marissa Tantrone or somebody during that interview I had with the showrunners said that as long as he doesn't get, you know, stabbed in the heart, he'll be around. Because I kind of thought you could pop one of those things like a balloon, but apparently the heart is the key piece.
I kept waiting for one of them to say, I dusted him.
Yeah, exactly. Very, very Buffy-esque.
Yeah, but, you know, so a couple of things. I mean, certainly May and Daisy as well. It's like they just want Sarge to be Coulson. And they go through that discussion about, well, is there a part of Coulson in him? Perhaps we can separate. Well, again, I think we get our answer by the end of the episode. But the one piece of cringeworthy dialogue for me is when the team's leaving to go and Piper goes to Sarge, "Hey Sarge, do me a solid, end her." I'm like,
that was the worst. That was the worst. I put that in my notes when I was writing my review. I'm like, what the heck was that? Very weird line.
And as if he's heard that expression anyway. But and then Shrike zombies, really? I guess. Okay. But so we've got Fitzsimmons, Deke at the lighthouse working on the Izell problem. And again, we've seen this brewing kind of below the surface, and it rises up now and then. But Fitz and Deke at odds over Deke's methods and certainly his business practices. And I don't know about you, but I certainly wasn't surprised when Deke shows him that he brought a lot of his development team on board and they worship at the altar of Deke.
That was so cool.
But when he says, "They identify as my grandparents," I get that. And I understand why he does it that way. He's got a bunch of millennials and it's better they don't ask questions. But whatever Nana and Bobo want, after you run it by me, of course. And I was sort of surprised that Fitz didn't pick up on that. Like, what the hell?
Yeah. Well, I think they were just so thankful that when they were putting the Shrike repelling arm bracelets, the slap bracelets on everybody, they only had one and they were going to have to crank them out. He already took care of that. So I think in some ways, Fitz may have been still reeling from the realization that he was able to mass produce them so quickly.
Right. And of course, his wizard status doesn't last too long because Fitz realizes that his success is built on stolen S.H.I.E.L.D. tech, including the Shaw drive, a.k.a.
The Shaw drive.
and then Fitz, rightfully so, half your ideas are mine.
Yeah.
And then Deke gives his half-hearted, although I think he actually believes this, that I built this company because nobody liked me, feels he doesn't belong. I'm like, shut up.
Well, I was like that at first, but I thought that was a very important speech for him to give as it went along, because he's had this veneer going this whole time, and it has cockiness attached to it, has a little bit of desperation. So some truth was needed here that, listen, I've just been trying to impress people and I'm trying to belong. And to me, that gives a sense of completion to the Deke arc for the season. So kind of put a bow on that before we moved on to other more important matters and character moments.
Yeah, but then he has to go to the Daisy angle, that you get the sense that he really is doing this to impress her, which we know he is on certainly some levels.
Well, at least he stayed away from that angle for the most part, especially when he was with Snowflake, of course. I do kind of wonder why he's not even mentioning Snowflake. Snowflake got a brief mention in this finale where he was talking about his girlfriend and he had to say, I was talking about Sequoia.
Yeah, that was great.
You know, so it is kind of nice that Deke has not been fawning all over her this whole time. I like that.
Right. And I guess, what do we expect, that she perished in the lighthouse takeover, I guess?
I guess so. Or was turned over to the authorities prior to all this happening. But yeah, it is weird that they never really said anything. All they needed was a brief bit of dialogue to wrap that up, because it's not like we're the only ones wondering that. I've seen that question on our Facebook group and in comments areas and Reddit elsewhere. So people are wondering.
Right. Now, you know, we were talking just a minute ago about the cracks that are developing between Fitz and Deke. And certainly Gemma has had more time to process who Deke is and what he's all about than Fitz has. But even she is, I think, reaching the end of her rope here. But the relationship between Mac and Daisy, and while she says on the one hand that, you know, you're the leader, I defer to you, you're the director, it almost seems as if, I don't want to say she wants power, but there's this attitude that, you know, I know better than you do. And what I love is that when things don't work out the way she thought they would, she really does apologize to Mac. And I love the fact that he doesn't hold it over her. And then she's like, don't even go there, dude. I screwed up.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I didn't really love seeing Mac and Daisy argue. And I think Yo-Yo even said at one point,
oh, it's painful.
Yeah, Yo-Yo was like, can we maybe save this for another time? They were under duress at the time anyway. So, but it served its purpose and it was a great dramatic moment.
Right. And at first, when she's questioning his decision to save Flint, I'm looking at Mac as if he's sort of out of control. On the rewatch, I saw it completely differently. But what I certainly have to acknowledge is the acting done by Henry Simmons, who is just so powerful in this argument with Daisy. And look, I'm not going to take anything away from Chloe Bennett's acting in this scene, because it was really moving as well. But just the two of them just really yelling at each other, something that, again, it's like, mom and dad, no, stop arguing.
Yeah, well, especially since it carries through to one of the great moments in the epilogue at the very end, when Mac's kind of waffling a bit on pushing that button, right. Which we'll talk about, obviously, but you know, Daisy still goes with her impulse. And so I think in general, these characters are so well written and we've become so familiar with them that we know when they're acting exactly as they would if they were not fictional characters. I mean, they are so true to themselves.
Right. And that's why the show gets away with things, yeah, that we view as being done wrong or not the way
right.
they should be.
It's because of the cast and the ensemble nature of it and the characters just being so well done.
Right. So one of the other things in 612, what is Sarge? I mean, we've certainly had that question for a while now, But May and Daisy still have that feeling that there's good in you, even if it's not him. And again, even though we know what he does in 613, you still wonder what it's like for him, because it does seem like this internal struggle that he's going through. And that's one of the things I love, is that one moment we think he's going to take out Izel, the next moment he does the total opposite.
Yeah. And I think they did a great job of leading us down the garden path here, because I didn't feel deceived. I felt like they really got a good solid one over on us, because if it wasn't for the fact that Sarge said too much, I thought that might've been a little overkill. And then May and Daisy kind of give each other a little comment. That sounded just like what Coulson would have said in this situation. If they hadn't had that moment, I don't know that I would have fully been on board. But at that point in episode 612, I was right along with May, hoping that maybe they could build Coulson back up. Now, would we have been satisfied with that as a solution to the Coulson problem, more so than the LMD version? No. Probably not. So I'm glad they, you know, chose not to go that route where they turned Sarge into a version of Coulson. That just wouldn't have worked, wouldn't have been believable.
Right. So we get that final scene with Sarge, Izel, May. They're in the temple, and May's trying to convince him that the emotional pain that he feels is actually love. And on the one hand, we kind of know where she's going here. We're not sure how he's going to react, but I don't know about you. I certainly didn't see that coming when he plunges the sword into her chest.
Oh, no.
And then pushes her through the portal.
Can you imagine if we had had to wait a week after that moment? That would have been horrible. But yeah, it does make sense, because he's saying, okay, that's the pain I'm feeling. That's what's giving me so much uncertainty in my life. Well, one quick way to get rid of that, you know, get rid of the object of your love. Of course, if he had been true to his memories, he would have known that May is certainly not the only one you need to get rid of, to get rid of those feelings. But it did bring us that great tragic moment, which carried through all the way through the finale. So just was a great little twist at the end of the penultimate episode.
Right. Now we get to the epilogue, and we've got Enoch and his Chronicom buddies who've apparently become hunters. And of course, we're wondering, is that it for him? But in terms of a setup for season 7, it's just brilliantly done, because we've got all of these different angles going, and they really all do make sense within the greater context. And the Chronicom involvement and their desire to take Earth as their new home planet is certainly a fascinating story arc.
And that's the advantage that you get when you break two seasons at once. And if you think about it, breaking two 13-episode seasons is not that far off from breaking one 22-episode season. So I'm sure they were able to weave that Chronicom thread in specifically to set up season 7.
Now, you know, as we get into the episode 13 discussion for season 6, I want to bring something up that was being discussed in the Facebook group. And I think it was Doug Crabtree that pointed it out specifically, that I think the problem a lot of us have with S.H.I.E.L.D., particularly in season 6, is the stakes for the characters just don't seem to be there in any kind of a meaningful way.
Right. You mean specifically with the deaths that we've been dealt?
Yes, exactly.
They need to be permanent. One of them, besides Davis, should be more permanent, right?
Because no offense to Davis, but big deal.
Right.
Anyway, we'll talk a little bit about that, because Doug, I'm with you on that. That's a problem that I have with a lot of shows, that if you're going to put your main characters in constant jeopardy, you have to understand who you're dealing with. And just real quickly, I mean, I think you and I discovered this when we were podcasting about Continuum, that science fiction fans are arguably the most critical fans there are, that if you make a mistake about anything, whether you're the podcaster or the writers for the show, the fans are going to notice. And obviously, we are suspending our disbelief, right? Time travel, fine. Alien beings, fine. But you can't push us too far. And I guess I feel like I'm not willing to accept anything.
Right.
And that's, I guess, what I feel in episode 13 that you're just pushing me a little bit too far with the character stakes, that if you're not going to kill one of these characters off, then don't put them in that kind of a situation.
Right. If you weren't going to kill off May, then don't stab her through the heart. And don't give her the speech, by the way, with Daisy. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved that speech. Very poignant. But then they put on the floodlights almost as though they were ending the scene. And the director was like, cut. You know, it turned out to be Gemma with her savior team. But still, it really kind of killed that drama.
Right. So we've got the Chronicom hunters and, you know, they breach the lighthouse looking for the key, which I think we figure is the knowledge of S.H.I.E.L.D. and whether that comes from an amalgamation of Coulson, Fitz, Simmons, Daisy, May, all of them, or whether what's certainly implied is that it's all they really need is Phil Coulson.
Well, but I think the key is a physical thing, and that is Fury's toolbox.
Oh, okay. Right. And they do mention that. So,
but that's the same thing as what you just said. In a broader sense, Fury's toolbox is what you just mentioned.
All right. So Fitz and Simmons realize that the Chronicoms are essentially executing an extermination of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I wonder, because I don't think it's really articulated specifically, are we looking at an extermination of the human race? Or
I don't think
are
so.
The Chronicoms... Okay, the Chronicoms are probably just going to use the human race to do their bidding, I guess.
That was the funniest question that I asked the showrunners. And again, like I said, I can't share it with the podcast. I wish I could. Debriefs have a few different rules surrounding them than other interviews. But I asked them, so why did Chronicoms choose Earth? Aren't there any other empty planets out there? And I think it was Jeff Bell that said, well, the short answer is, that's where we set our show. It's like, okay, I guess that's as good a reason as any. Because if you think about it, the Chronicoms shouldn't need to move in on Earth. I'm hoping what's going to happen here is that in season 7, they'll slowly reveal a specific reason why Earth is important to whatever Malachi or whoever ends up leading the evil faction of the Chronicoms later in season 7 want, you know?
Right. And of course, we're talking about 2020 Earth, not 1931 Earth. So,
or maybe that too. Who knows?
Right. But are we going to get into the save the Earth from the Chronicoms kind of a storyline? And I suspect we will to a certain extent.
Yep,
but
yep.
Once Fitz and Simmons realize what it is the Chronicoms want, and they set out to destroy the framework technology stored in the lab. And I love when Fitz laments destroying it. And Gemma makes some sort of a comment like, really? So is she referring to his fascination with Ada?
I guess that's probably part of it. But also, of course, there's the Dr. Fitz angle. So she must be kind of like incredulous that he would care. But it's something that he invented. That's one of the things that Deke lifted from him was the framework for his video game. So I think it's a really great place for them to end up for their final stand, because of the fact that they end up using this exact technology to bring back LMD Coulson. So this was a great way to have the Chronicoms come in looking for more information about S.H.I.E.L.D. Clearly Fury's toolbox was the main objective, but I'm sure this framework brain scan stuff would have been extremely crucial for them, which is why Fitz and Simmons wire the place up with explosives.
Right. And this is definitely not one of those scenes that's problematic for me. I love this scene because they quickly realize there's only one way out and they've got that covered. We don't have a remote detonator anyway. And they realize that they're ready to die together. And she says, Fitz, yeah, I know. Me too. I just really love that. And then when the cavalry comes in, not May, that cavalry, the Enoch cavalry. I just love the way that transpired. And then he drops the bombshell that I've got a plan, but you're going to have to change the natural course of your lives forever. And while we don't know what that specifically refers to, we have a pretty damn good idea.
Yeah. Well, I was wondering about that. I was focusing so much on the fact that here is Enoch bluffing, and he says, I find that bluffing is much easier when you kill someone and wear their skin. It's like, that was the perfect line. So I just like that they carried through that particular aspect of an earlier narrative on Kitson. But yeah, obviously he's got big plans in mind. If he cooked this up himself way back when he first got in contact with the other anthropologists, I'm not sure, but it's a brilliant plan.
Can I just say you have Enoch's voice down? Just saying, dude.
That's why they pay me the big bucks for audiobooks.
All right. So, you know, on the one hand, one of the problems with the internet is that photographs from the yet to be aired season have leaked out there. So as Yo-Yo is near death with the, you know, I think I have my notes as she's shrieking out and pleading with Daisy to hit her with a knife. And Daisy, of course, doesn't want to do it. But did you think there was any point that Daisy would do it?
Knowing that we saw Natalia Cordova all over the internet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I guess that was one of those dramatic moments that I think we've seen in a lot of different TV shows where you knew there was going to be a last minute save. You just didn't know what form it would take. So they really did a good job of making it, you know, go to the last possible moment. Especially saying that Mac's not going to be able to do it, so Daisy, you have to do it. She seemed like she was on board, and then she couldn't do it in the moment. That's what really made that moment so great, not the fact that it was all undone. I mean, aside from the fact that, as expected, killing Izel killed all the Shrikes in a Night King moment out of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, we've never seen that one before.
Yeah, and it's just like, once the Night King did it, that's where I got to my limit. I'm like, we need to end this trope now. This needs to die. We need to never see it again. Because it didn't just kill the Shrike. It closed the portal.
Right.
And she used, you know, Flint to bring the monolith together and open the portal. Why would killing her close the portal? I mean, I'm glad it did, obviously. It wrapped up the Izel storyline so we could move on to the epilogue. But saving Yo-Yo, wonderful. Great. That's great. I'm glad she threw up the bat or whatever. But
oh, that was pretty cool, though.
Yeah. But closing the portal, that was just like she had put in all three of those stones. That portal should have been open. The door was opening to the legions of her people coming in through the door that we saw from afar. So I definitely think the closing of the portal was a cop out. But again, what choice did they have? They only had a certain amount of time in the episode.
Right. And, you know, you mentioned that as a trope, and I fully agree, you know, destroy the mothership and it takes care of everybody. We've seen it, you know, so many times, but I did really like the Indiana Jones vibe that get as they're in the temple. The three hooded guys show up and I'm like, oh, this is cool. I love it. They've got the necklaces with the stones. They take them out.
Very ritualistic.
Yes. I just really like that. But then we get the scene where May, you know, there's a pool of blood. I mean, my gosh, May had to have lost half her blood.
Well, but it didn't matter, right?
I know.
When she was in that realm, death became meaningless. I kind of liked that, actually.
Okay, but then why does there need to be a sword fight between her and Izel if death doesn't matter?
Yeah, I guess it was more about keeping her from putting those three stones in to open the door, which May did not succeed in doing. But at least it did set up the final blow, right? Her coming through the portal and stabbing her from in the back. Although you have to think Izel should have seen that coming. But yeah, the sword fight, very dramatic, but perhaps a little unnecessary narratively.
But from a choreography standpoint, though, it was wonderfully executed right from the start when May leaps down from above and takes her on. So again, it was a tightly choreographed fight scene. It was cool. But once we're in the temple, and here's one of the things that is really problematic for me, because Daisy, Yo-Yo, Mac, Deke, they're looking for Sarge in the temple. Daisy quakes Sarge to the point that we see his true nature. He just walks towards her, throws her against the wall, and seeing that, Mac thinks he can beat Sarge in a fist fight.
Yeah.
Make matters worse, that's basically what we're shown, is that Mac can hang with him in a fist fight. Now, Mac's a big guy, don't get me wrong, but what we've just seen, I mean, come on.
Yeah, that was a bit much. And what a surprise. And maybe it was just kind of lost in the moment. I think it was even for me to a certain extent that this creature underneath, really cool. Like, I love the big long fangs, but it's not Ghost Rider.
Right.
And we got several mentions of Ghost Rider in previous episodes. I think there were a lot of people that were expecting to see a form of Ghost Rider to explain why Coulson specifically was chosen as a skin. So I guess I didn't really care all that much, but I do know that there were people that were disappointed by that.
Yeah, I'm glad they did not go there, to be quite honest.
Yeah, especially since Ghost Rider is already being set up on Hulu for his own show with Gabriel Luna playing him. So you kind of have to stick with that version of events.
Right. So, okay, I like the way everything was resolved, kind of, you know, Daisy and Sarge are doing the dance, May comes through the portal and dusts Izel.
Yeah.
Daisy quakes Sarge, Mac cuts him in two.
It was a little pat.
Yeah.
You know, it was a little bit too quick there at the end, but considering where we went after that, I was kind of like, okay, you know what? I'm just so relieved that we're done with Izel that I'm okay.
And we can't lose sight of the fact that we're dealing with a superhero show.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's just, as I said before, sometimes you push me too far
right. In
what you're asking me to believe and accept. But for the most part, I liked all of that. But then we get to, you know, the scene that required you to write a separate story on Den of Geek explaining the ending,
Yeah. Which
ordinarily might be the epilogue. And certainly the epilogue is really a big deal here. But the final scene, May asks Daisy if there was anything of Coulson left. I'm kind of looking at it like she lies to her when she says no, right? I mean,
No. I think she's telling the truth. The Coulson memories were remnants. They were hoping they could pull it up into more, but that's really all there was. The evil that was inside of him was really all that was left. And if you think about it logically, that makes sense. I was kind of even mentioning that at the time. How much are these memories indicative of anything that they can hang their hats on with regard to rescuing Coulson in some form? So I think her telling her no, that there wasn't anything left of Coulson, is true. Why do you say it's not true?
Well, I just wonder if there were some of those things that was part of Sarge's struggle, that he's got these residual memories of Coulson, and that perhaps they cause him to question some of the things that he's doing.
Okay. Well, that's nothing
that's
that
all.
May didn't already know, though. So
Right. So after May asks Daisy, you know, if there's anything of Coulson left, she says, no, but you'll see him soon enough. We're like, okay.
Yeah. That was May saying that. And I think that's where I really enjoyed the poignancy of the moment. But that death scene, in essence, as much as we would miss May, and she's a major character, that, can you imagine if they actually stuck to their guns with that one? But they kind of needed to, sorry to say.
Yeah, I think so too. And you know, again, you're the one that leaked the photo from the rap party, so.
Yeah, exactly.
But then we get that very stoic Simmons and a S.H.I.E.L.D. team, and right away we sense there's something different here. She looks different, the clothes are different, the attitude's different, and we don't know what's going on. She says May is going to be fine, and everybody gets back on Zephyr, and of course one of the first things they notice is that there have been significant upgrades. When the heck did you have time to do that?
Yeah, and she just very cryptically said, we had time. Which, of course, my head immediately went to time travel, but I was like, but how? In fact, if they hadn't mentioned time travel as a solution that the Chronicoms were seeking to rescue their planet with Atara pursuing that particular angle, then I wouldn't have necessarily leaped to it quite so quickly. But I think that we were able to look around and decide that, okay, clearly there's something going on, especially with regard to her confidence that May would be okay. And the fact that they had a cryogenic chamber, exactly the same as the one Fitz used, by the way. Like, where did they get that? They're putting her in deep sleep until they can repair her, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, really cool that it unfolds bit by bit like that.
Right. So we learn that Zephyr has been put on autopilot by Fitz, who is not with them. And then that takes us back to what Enoch had told them, is that the natural course of your lives is going to change forever. So when we see that they're over New York City, and like you, I'm thinking time travel. And of course, they upgraded the jump drive to include time travel, or so it would seem. But being able to look at the visuals that were presented, you know, maybe using a little Google and Wikipedia, we determined that this looks like it's probably 1931.
Right. And the frame of reference for that is the construction material that's still on the Empire State Building. The Empire State Building was the tallest building in the world for a good 40 years or so. If it's just finishing up, then it must be 1931. It I think, debuted in May of that year. And Daisy refers to, I could use a drink, but I guess that's illegal in this time period. And Prohibition, of course, ended in 1933. So I think what we're seeing here also must have something to do with why some of those men in the radiation suits came in and took a core sample out of the time travel monolith. Did you notice that?
I did, yes.
So, and that's one of those questions I asked the showrunners. Was that core sample how the engine works with time travel? And Jed's answer was, it just might. And I was like, okay, moving on to the next question. They were very tight-lipped as usual.
All right. Now, why would Daisy bring up the thing about Prohibition? In other words, does she look out there and immediately know, oh, this must be 1931? Does she have that information?
I don't know. Well, that happened after a commercial, though. So that could have just been a discussion that was had off screen that this is 1931. But yeah, that's a good point. She immediately contextualized where they were.
Okay. So we get to the epilogue, and we'll come back to, you know, this discussion in a second, we promise. So with Enoch's help, we learn that they have made a Coulson LMD, updated his memories to fill in the gaps. And I love, as Simmons is explaining the dilemma here about whether we're going to go forward with this or not. And then as soon as Daisy realizes what it is, she just whacks the button and here we are.
I love that. And like I said, that was a great follow-up to the earlier argument between Mac and Daisy. And now Mac is equivocating, being careful, as he was saying that she should be, instead of being so reckless in making the decisions unilaterally. Well, here she makes another unilateral decision. I want to see Coulson, therefore I am hitting this button. No discussion. And of course, right, that's what Simmons wants as well. But she wanted it to be left up to them, mainly because Coulson has made his views very clear on this. He does not want them bringing him back for any reason, because he's already had his second chance with the Kree blood in season one. So they are going against his express wishes. And I actually kind of think it would be cool if in season seven, the LMD Coulson discussed that with them, you know, saying, you know, you shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't be here. That kind of existential dilemma.
Well, is this Coulson real?
I think this is about as real as you can get, especially since LMDs were already a questionable existence in terms of their reality. But if you add Chronicom tech to it, oh man, I mean, that puts it over the edge, because Chronicoms already seem like sentient beings separate from their machine nature already. So add that in with Coulson's memories, and I think this is about as real as you can get. But the question then does rise, what makes a person? Is it just their memories? Is that all that they need in order to be themselves? Who knows?
Yeah. Isaac Asimov has written extensively on this subject. And if you ever have the chance, there's a lot of great things out there. What makes a person a person? And he gets into the whole cybernetic issue, that if a person is actually more machine than human, and certainly that's a path we've headed down. But one of the things that we think about, all right, fine. So SHIELD is now in 1931. SSR doesn't even come into existence until 1940. So what's going to happen in these 9 years? Are they going to rewrite the timeline?
I don't know. Because we wouldn't necessarily even be thinking along those lines if Simmons hadn't specifically said, we need a SHIELD expert, because these Chronicoms are going to exploit everything they've learned from Fury's toolbox and from our brain scans from Fitz and Simmons. And they were trying to get a hold of the framework to get even more knowledge. Why that's important, we don't know. But obviously SHIELD history is going to come into play. Otherwise, Simmons would not have said that. So people automatically think of Agent Carter and her ilk, except, you know, Steve's, I think, about 12 or 13 years old at this point, and Peggy is 10.
Right.
So not sure how they're going to work that in.
Right. According to the Marvel Wiki, she was born in 1921.
Right. So we shall see. I do think there's a possibility of that. And of course, the information that Ming-Na Wen inadvertently shared plays into that as well. But I think there either is going to be a situation where they will jump multiple times and that they won't spend the entire time in 1931, or there's something else at play that we just can't really conceive of yet.
Okay. Now, one point that I meant to ask you about earlier in the discussion has to do with Yo-Yo. And again, I think there was a lot of discussion on the Facebook group about Yo-Yo's role in much of season six and how I think a lot of the viewers feel like her character, I don't want to say was wasted, but that there could have been a lot more done with her. But do we now see that she can slow or even stop time?
Yeah, what a dangerous thing for them to have introduced, because I think they already have to be very careful. I think I read this in one of the other websites that did a debrief with them, how they have to really hold Quake powers and Speedy powers in reserve for moments when it really makes a lot of sense. Otherwise, people would be looking for them to solve all the problems using inhuman powers. But to introduce her ability to, you know, watch those bullets aim directly at the people she's trying to shoot by slowing down time without even moving. And that's exactly what she says. Oh, I've always been able to slow down time without moving. I'm like, well, okay, that's news to us, because now we're going to really expect them to do this. Maybe they're actually thinking of using that in season seven because of the time travel angle. Maybe it comes into play somehow.
All right. Now, wasn't there a time when Daisy first recognizes the powers that she has that using them really wiped her out and she had to learn to?
Oh, yeah.
So you wonder whether that's going to be more of a factor in season seven, because as you said, you've got all these powers, but the danger is you can't constantly use them if there's no cost to using them.
Right. It becomes too easy narratively, and you don't want to get into that trap. You want to have your conflicts be solved in multiple different ways, not just by those two. So yeah, that's a good point. I think that there's a lot of things that they can do in season seven that still uses them. I think because we've moved beyond the inhuman plot from season four, that we have just those two. So at least they don't have too many things to worry about in terms of combating powered individuals.
Yeah. But, you know, just really a wonderful conclusion to season six. And despite the fact that it was uneven in spots, you and I have said many times, you know, we enjoy the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but I think both of us feel we should watch them because we've been podcasting about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and we should be steeped in the Marvel world. But, oh, you know, this, I love Jessica Jones and it's very different than S.H.I.E.L.D., but this is by far the best Marvel TV series.
Yeah, I agree.
Hands down.
I don't watch any comic book shows. And like you said, I've watched most of the MCU movies because I felt I should, not because I actually wanted to.
So, yeah, right.
So, I mean, I've enjoyed some of them. But yeah, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has been a huge part of my enjoyment in this arena that just hasn't been the case for any other show, oddly enough. Even Legends of Tomorrow, which people keep telling me has a lot of good time travel in it. So,
right. But I mean, when you look at the other Marvel shows, whether, you know, Iron Fist, Luke Cage, you know, well, Iron Fist wasn't good. Luke Cage is great. But you go over to the DC shows like Arrow, Flash. Yeah, they're OK. But no.
Yeah, I'll tell you my type of comic book TV show, Umbrella Academy.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
I love that one. So. But luckily, we did get some sass in the finale because it wasn't too ultra serious. And there were actually some really good lines that Faith brought up for this final Faith Shield SAS report. And don't worry, we actually will share the results on the Facebook group. So vote for this one just like you would any other. So let me turn it over to Faith for the final Shield SAS report of season 6.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the final Shield SAS report of 2019. Here we are at the season finale. It was a bumpy ride, but a good close to the season. And I definitely gathered some sass over the 2 hours. But before we get to those, here's the winner from episode 10. Simmons with Things Around Here.
What wounds? They've all healed. Completely.
Doesn't make any sense.
Oh, we expect things around here to make sense now.
And now for this week's contenders. From the first hour, number 1, Feed the Poor.
Made those, didn't I?
No, it was Isel, not you.
And what's she gonna do with them? Something terrible, I'm guessing.
If she ain't gonna use it to feed the poor or heal the sick.
Number 2, did I steal math?
You've stolen all of this.
I use good ideas, okay? I use math. Did I steal math?
Number 3, too much?
Too much? I don't know, kind of felt like overkill.
And from the second hour, number 4, I doubt that.
This will be the hardest thing you have ever done.
I doubt that.
Nothing's ever easy with you, is it?
What do we have to do?
Change the natural course of your lives forever.
Yeah.
And number 5, Reborn.
Their energies will live on as something else.
Right, I've heard that before. Well then.
Get ready to be reborn.
Hopefully I didn't miss any of your favorites, but if I did, we can talk about it on Facebook, which is also where you could vote on your favorites, as well as another poll I'll have up about whether this report should go back to being the Cole Sass report next season. So visit facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM and vote on both of those polls. While you do that, I'm going to go find my best 1930s looks. As always, it's been a pleasure. Until next season, everybody.
All right. Thank you so much, Faith. And those are some great lines. I'm so glad that you chose a couple of my favorites there. But because you have done so much for us over the years, I want to start off with you, Faith, for feedback, for the feedback segment. And Faith says, overall, the unevenness of the storyline and all the damn time and space made this season not my favorite. But I had a ton of varying emotions and thoughts in these 2 hours of television. I've made bullet points so my crazy thoughts seem slightly more ordered. I got bored with the Izel storyline in these 2 episodes before we were even halfway through the Izel storyline. Thankfully, the Chronicom storyline paid off, but it felt wedged in a lot of this season. Marvel has a real problem deciding how strong someone should be. If Yo-Yo can watch a bullet go in slow motion toward a target, she can also see a shrike coming before it gets to her mouth, or to Keller's mouth for that matter. Yeah, we had a lot of problem with her not being able to save Keller at the time. If Daisy can't quake Pachakutik, there's no way Mac can best him in a fight. Like you said, Dave. I think someone said this last week, but if one of the monoliths actually creates life, Izel doesn't need a slew of humans. She needs like 5 people who are afraid of crowds, and boom, there's your army. The characters on this show are why I am here every damn week. All of them are beautifully crafted, and the actors that play them are friggin' spectacular. Henry Simmons straight up brought every emotion to the table with Mac in this episode. And did I cheer when he sliced through Pachakutik? Of course I did. Holy shnikey, Ming-Na Wen is a treasure, and I love her. I was full on crying during her death scene with Daisy, knowing full well that she was not dead. Holy hell, can the Whedons please, 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 please let a couple be happy for an extended period of time? It really is okay if Fitzsimmons stay together. I assume they spent a lot of time together off screen while they were developing the LMD and upgrading Zephyr 1, but Gemma's line about never getting to know where Fitz is? Are we seriously sticking with that? Nope, nope. I do not accept. I would like a refund. I know there are plenty of people who think it's a cheap move to bring Coulson back, but I am all for it. I love Clark Gregg. This show would have a giant hole without him in it. Plus, weren't we all Daisy when she hit that button? Yes. Yes, we were. So we're in the past. Fun times. I like time travel. I can dig it. We better live here for a good 2 episodes so I can see some serious wonderful costumes. And because you have introduced time travel and had discussions about early S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm going to need Peggy Carter to show up. If she doesn't, I will silently judge everyone involved in creating this show. So Faith is clearly assuming that they're only going to be in this time period for a couple of episodes, if that, and move on to somewhere else, which I think is a possibility. Lastly, I'm kind of pissed that I didn't see Robbie or Ghost Rider. Ghost Rider's name was dropped twice and we got nothing? He better show up in season 7 or I will doubly judge everyone. And actually, I don't think Faith is going to get her wish on that last point, Dave. I think Ghost Rider was just a contextual clue for Sarge and that's it.
You know, and if you're asking me to place a bet, I think the people that want Peggy Carter might be disappointed as well.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, but I guess we'll see. All right, well, we heard from Tautos, who says, for a show frequently known for doing the unexpected, this two-parter felt rather contrived. They made such a big deal out of Daisy being able to dissolve the Shrike Swarm. Why couldn't she use the same method to take down the zombies? Yeah, because she says, oh, there are too many of them.
Yeah.
The team was already considering the hosts as past savings, so it wouldn't have mattered if Daisy quaking the Shrike also killed the host. And once again, the fastest person on the team can't stop a Shrike from entering her own mouth. Not that it mattered, since Daisy refused to stab her after promising to. Then Izel's death magically uninfects Yo-Yo. I guess they wanted to avoid having Mac demand they use the time machine to go back and save her. I wonder if that connection between creator and creation extends to Mac, Yo-Yo, and Flint. I mean, if they died, would Flint turn into black goo? We also got a last-second save from Enoch for Fitzsimmons, leading to them being separated yet again. And now that we know Chronocoms can easily switch skins and deceive each other, I wonder if we'll see one of the hunters using Enoch's skin to infiltrate S.H.I.E.L.D. next season.
Please no.
Yeah. Despite some misgiving with this finale, I'm totally on board for next season. The history of S.H.I.E.L.D. combined with a Chronicom time war sounds quite interesting. Thanks for putting together another great season of The Sandbox.
Yeah, and I want to address her point about Flint, because I don't think that's necessarily the same thing as the Shrike infection, the creation monolith making a person. I think, like I said earlier in the podcast, unless he gets poked in the heart with a sharp stick, I think we're okay with Flint. But yeah, I can't wait to see what they do with Flint. And that's another inhuman power that we have to accommodate as well. I mentioned earlier that it would just be Daisy and Yo-Yo, but there's Flint as well. So that's kind of fun. Yeah.
Pebbles.
Yeah, Pebbles. And we heard from Skimmins. Skimmins has a lot to say. She said, I get using Flint to put the pieces back together, but at the same time, Mac has seen all the monoliths whole, so why can't the Fear Dimension just create them whole already? I think, I'm not sure, but I think the Fear Dimension might only be able to create people or living creatures. I'm not sure. It's like Izel saying she can create her body, but her people need hosts so you can do the finale. So what happened to Snowflake? Why is she not helping? You got to love the image of a person with a gun, then May with a knife, because May. The Simmons fan in me is loving her as HQ leader, and I say more of that, please. I disagree, Fitz. Deke is way more watchable than you. I'm so glad Deke called Fitz out, because he has had it coming for years. Sarge telling May he'll never be Coulson. Love it. Who does Mac think he is, questioning Daisy? He's the one who went off to chase his girlfriend and protect her instead of letting May or someone else go to help her and trusting his team that way. So it's not like he has great choice making either.
Yeah, but as we said, I like the fact that when Daisy apologizes to him, I think he instinctively knows that he has no right to judge her either. And I think he even says that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that her contrition plus his being low-key about it is a good formula.
Yeah.
Oh, now that's a cliffhanger. Sword to the chest is like Tuesday for May, so that's not going to take her down, but it was a great drama moment. You know who would be useful at taking down crazy Chronicoms? Snowflake! How does Yo-Yo keep forgetting she has robot hands? Grab its wings and pull it out! I love how this whole feedback from Skimmins is like a live tweet of just her. Because it's like as she's watching it. I love it. Yeah. Daisy, what are you doing? Quake that thing. Ugh, sometimes these action moments really feel like plot for drama's sake instead of organic moments. Framework, good times. That was arguably the best season. And actually, Skimmins, I think I saw somewhere out there that there's been some polls out there already, but also at the end of season six, that still place season four as at the top by quite a bit. So I think you're right there. So is Deke going to take Davis's flight spot now? I hope he's a terrible pilot, so I hope not. Per usual, May wins best action moment. I'm glad Yo-Yo isn't dead, but at the same time, it felt convenient. And again, like drama for just drama, not because they were really going to kill her or because they decided to save her after she got sick an episode before, you know. Gemma with the awesome backlit shot. Her calm, her preparedness, her ability to handle agents. Why is she not the director, or at least the assistant to the director again? Again, season four, good times. I still love you too, season two. Sadly, I know they won't do it, but if you're going to bring fighters back who have SHIELD knowledge, why not whip up an LMD Peggy Carter? Well, you need memories in order to make an accurate LMD, am I right, Dave?
you're right. Do not have those.
Unless you're going to make Ada, you know. We, of course, have to talk about LMD Coulson now. They baked a new Coulson, y'all. I will say this isn't as egregious as the Fitz cop-out because Coulson's body is still dead. But it's a cop-out all the same, given he has all his memories plus a history of what he's missed. If at the end of the series he shuts down and we see how the team does beyond Coulson, then I'll consider it fan service. Still, he was in there, but not a full-on cop-out because they did kill their lead. Sure, it's not the same as offing him at the end of season four and doing three seasons without him, but they technically did it a season before the series end, and that's more than some do. If LMD Coulson is still part of the team and not saying each day how he's not Coulson, then it's a full-on cop-out. Because while I know some will say an LMD is not a real person, I remind them they think they are. Well, that's true. May LMD definitely thought she was real, right?
Yeah, sure.
And we had a whole season regarding Fitz treating Ada like she was more. So if you can say Flint is real enough, though he was created from Max and Yo-Yo's minds, why can't LMD Coulson be a real boy, as it were? To be fair, if LMD Coulson is still with the team at series end, but does say he's just an encyclopedia of Coulson, not really Coulson, then I will also consider it not a hardcore cop-out, because again, Coulson will really be dead. Hopefully that all made sense. Yeah, it did, Skimmins, that was good. We'll see how they chose to handle it, but right now I'm still continually cautious with this plot. Some definite nitpicks with this episode, but the good outweighed the bad so much, I have to say this was a great episode. Oh, thank you so much, Skimmins. That was some great feedback.
Okay. And finally, we heard from Daryl again this week, who says, get ready for some stream of consciousness feedback. Wow. DMN. Death means nothing, I guess. It was a fine 2 hours, and I'm glad I watched it live. I'm happy Deke got his major scene because all of you need to get on the Deke train.
Yeah.
He may not be everyone's favorite character, but he brings a lot to the table. I do find myself concerned about the lack of Snowflake in the episode. In fact, this is the third week in a row she hasn't been around. I can only assume she's dead or will be soon with the lighthouse taken over. Were there larger plans for her character? Why bring her back at all? Sarge's entire team is dead, and she's kept alive for reasons I can't fathom.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And with regard to the lighthouse, I do kind of wonder if they somehow got to the 21st floor and got Deke's employees and Agent Diaz and all the other people that they sent down there, because they clearly have personnel, so they had to come from somewhere. But I'm just not sure what the fate of those left behind at the lighthouse was. Some might be gone forever. Some might be coming back. Or some might have already come back through the magic of time travel. Who knows?
Right. Or, as you said, she might already be in a federal prison somewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I'm so tired of the Chronicom storyline, except Enoch, of course. Always a pleasure to see him.
Yeah.
When they started mentioning a Chronica 3, I thought there was a good possibility it might have been Earth, and I instantly hated the idea. the show seems to be setting up a Peggy Carter cameo for next season, and it's far past time for her story on the small screen was continued. They did us exactly zero favors when they canceled that show with so much story left unexplored. May not be immediate, of course, but I have to hope it's coming. The finale left more unanswered questions than I wanted to contemplate. Even to this day, we have no idea of their larger plans for the series. Even now, as I write this, I have at least five questions left unanswered by the early cancellation. All right, rant over, back to Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Was that Julian among the dead agents? It kind of looked like him. I was glad to see Daisy's Quake powers, but it was much later than I would have expected. I hope all those Shrike-free people can get home okay. I don't understand this fear dimension story at all anymore. So Flint's real or just an echo of his future self? And where are he and Piper now? Did anyone ever pick up Dr. Benson?
Oh, yeah. What the heck? Yeah, I think, like I said, Flint and Piper, I assume, were on the 21st floor. I hope they were able to rescue them. I did get that answer from the showrunners that Flint definitely will be around next season. But yeah, Dr. Benson, I think, might be done, wouldn't you think, for season six, Dave?
Yeah, maybe. I think there are a lot of little plot points that they just didn't have time to address all of them in these two episodes.
But I think Julian was among the dead.
Right. Now, obviously, they would have gone back to the lighthouse, but with that taken over, where else could they go? This season finale has really left more unanswered questions than I would have liked. I am glad to see May will be fine, but she seemed very sentimental when talking to Sarge, and it really threw me off. I really did like the Izel and May sword fight, and that was very entertaining. I liked the unexpectedness of Izel's death, too. She needed to die, and I can't think of a better way to do it, whether it was Night King simplistic or not.
Yeah, he's quoting my review there.
Yeah. I hated seeing Daisy and Mac fight. The team needs to be on the same page, and when they fight, I really don't like it. Also, please stop splitting up Fitz and Simmons. They're not my ship, Skimmons is, but I am tired of the show constantly going to the plot point over and over and over again.
Yep, one last time. Separating Fitz and Simmons. That might not last very long. I think there's a strategic reason why Fitz is separated from Simmons, like almost like a compartmentalizing the knowledge so that if someone gets captured, they genuinely do not have the answers to give up. So I think there's a reason why she doesn't know where Fitz is. All right. Well, thank you very much to all those. In fact, I really have to give a proper kudos to Skimmons, Faith, Taltos, and Daryl for being regular contributors all season long. And of course, we've had a number of regulars over the years, but those really carried season six almost by themselves with a couple of exceptions. So thank you very much, everybody. But it is announcement time. So we hope everyone is still listening like I entreated everyone to at the top of the podcast. We'll post this announcement on the Facebook group as well. But like we said at the top, Tuesday was the last day of shooting for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., so it seems somehow appropriate that less than a week later, the day I thought would never come, Dave and I are wrapping up with The Sandbox as well. Now you might be saying, what does that mean? Why do you say that? Well, it's because, unfortunately, Dave and I have decided that we will not be continuing with our podcast for Season 7. So this episode, episode 114, is the last Sandbox. And this may be a strange thought to have, but I can't help but notice that this means we have a strange sort of set of bookends for the Sandbox because we didn't podcast for season one either. So we'll be missing the first and unfortunately the last season as well here on the Sandbox feed. But yes, sadly, this is goodbye from us on Golden Spiral Media anyway. We'll still maintain things like the Facebook group, and we'll definitely discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and anything Marvel there, all you like, if people decide to stay and chat. And we hope you do, because we've built such a great community there, and it's been established for, gosh, ever since we started in season two. And although we won't be putting out a weekly analysis and review on GSM's site anymore, I will still be reviewing the show for Den of Geek, so I definitely will be watching. We just won't be podcasting about it. Now, you might be wondering how we made this supremely hard choice, but we decided that we're just going to let this decision speak for itself, because the reasons behind it aren't really all that important or even very interesting, actually. And we don't want to, I guess, alienate anyone by providing details that could potentially create some bad feelings. Suffice it to say that because of our Den of Geek commitments and some new expectations that came down the pike for GSM hosts, we made this difficult decision to conclude our run with season six, mostly because there just isn't enough time in the day, along with a few other personal reasons. But, you know, we've podcasted about this show, gosh, longer than any show we've covered, including Continuum, which started it all. And, you know, time travel is a real huge interest of mine in particular. And you know what? Despite that, we've loved every second of it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. never failed to inspire a great discussion. That's what's made it really special, along with the interaction with the community, whether it be with Faith and her SAS report, whether it be the many regular contributors to our feedback segment, or on social media, where we're always able to keep tabs on topics of interest all year long, even when the show wasn't airing. And you guys were a huge part of that. And we will continue to treasure that even when we're not producing a podcast. And we sincerely hope you will too. So thank you to everyone for 5 years of fun. And we hope you enjoyed listening to the podcast as much as we enjoyed chatting about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But with that said, we'll say it one last time. That's going to be it for this edition of The Sandbox and for The Sandbox in general. But like we said, keep up with the show news and fan interaction with us anyway, especially in our popular Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/AgentsOfShieldGSM, which is also where you can vote one last time on the S.H.I.E.L.D. SAS report. And I'm sure maybe Faith will continue to put that in the Facebook group next year. Who knows?
Yep. And in the meantime, you can check out our other podcasts. Wayne and I are currently discussing the Netflix time travel series Dark at scifitvrewatch.podbean.com. Sci-Fi Fidelity, which Michael and I do, is at podcast.denofgeek.com, or you can search for us wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you once again for all everyone has done for us, especially Faith McQuinn, who brought us the fabulous Cole SAS or S.H.I.E.L.D. SAS report, and all of those who sent us feedback over the years. Hopefully we'll hear from you guys elsewhere. Sorry, Fred, that you didn't catch up in time. Bye, everyone.
All right, Mike, I'll shut down the framework, but you grab the Terrigen crystals and turn off the lights.